ultimately, the education system, it's like self-selecting. It's just like standardized testing. If you've got a bazillion different degrees, that just means that you've been through 10 years of propaganda and programming, and you are going to faithfully carry out what the educational industrial complex wants you to do, which has nothing to do with education.
Welcome to Idaho Speaks, the place to learn about candidates and issues important to Idaho. My name is Ed, and I created this channel to overcome the media bias that plagues our communities and our state. When presented all the information, I believe you, the voter, will make the best decision for our future. At Idaho Speaks, we will give you the side of the story being hidden by mainstream media and big tech giants. Idaho Speaks, your issues, your candidates, your state. We are continuing our effort to vet the candidates. And vetting's really the wrong word here. Welcome to Idaho Speaks. You are the individual that's vetting the candidates. I'm not. I'm just talking. I get to talk to people, and I love talking to people. And today's episode is actually about one of my most passionate topics, and that's education. With me in studio today is David Riley, who is running for the Post Falls School District Board of Trustees. David, thank you so much for coming in studio today.
Thanks for having me here, Ed.
So let's start with kind of a softball question. You're going to hit this one right out of the park. Who is David Riley?
Ah, a man of mystery and enigma.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I'm 32 years old. I'm a father, a new father, actually, my daughter, Philomena.
Congratulations. Yeah.
She was born on Inauguration Day.
Ooh.
So a day that for a lot of people was one of the darkest days of American history that they had lived through. To me, I look back on it and it's just joy.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because it's like my daughter coming out and saying, I don't care about your elections or your oligarchs or whatever's going on in the country. You know, I'm here. Let's go.
Right.
So
right.
Good. That's good. Been married to my wife for about a little over a year and a half, 8-9 months. We got married on Valentine's Day of 2020, just before the coronavirus pandemic
kicked
off.
Right on. Well, that's like a year-long honeymoon then.
Right. Well, tell me about it. It's like we go on our honeymoon, we come back. I went to CPAC and was in a room with like Raheem Kassam and Jack Posobiec and all of these other influencers, and somebody had coronavirus, and I get this email as soon as I get home: you've been exposed. You need to lock down for a week or two. And I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me. And so I did it. We didn't know much about the thing as it was beginning in its infancy, but by the end of the 2 weeks, I was like ready to get out and do things, and the whole nation shut down. So
right.
Yeah, it was like
good timing.
Yeah, great. It's like, oh, thank you very much. So so we were living in Indiana actually at that time. I was working for a Catholic nonprofit educational institution, and I met my wife here in Post Falls actually at the Oval Office. Over martinis.
So you both like garlic, okay.
We like garlic and we like martinis.
Yeah. All right.
Shaken, not stirred.
That's it.
So Riley. I poached
David
her.
Riley.
Right. So I poached her from the area and I brought her out with me to Indiana. And within like 3 or 4 months of being married, it's like, we've got to get out of here. There were riots that were happening not very far away and lots of just general upheavals, supply shortages. And where we were living in South Bend, Indiana, that's where Pete Buttigieg, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's where he is from, Notre Dame. My wife was working there at the time. And it was very difficult because it was... everything was politicized. Whether or not you wore a mask was politicized. If you didn't wear a mask, you probably voted for Donald Trump. And if you did that, then you're probably a bad person, yada, yada. So it was like, we need to get out and go be with your family and be with people that are like-minded. And that meant North Idaho. That was the only place on the list of possible places to go. And so we've been here since last October.
So, okay, just out of curiosity, since you brought it out, what else was on the list besides North Idaho?
It's a very, very short list.
Okay, right,
that's right. It. Kootenai County is it. It's been on my... I've wanted to live here since 2017.
Okay.
Is when I first heard about it. There's a very... It's actually, I believe, the second largest concentration of traditionalist Catholics per capita in the United States of America, second only to Kansas.
I did not know that.
Yes. So, yeah, we've got a very large Catholic constituency up here. And as a matter of fact, the school district where I'll be running for office, there's actually three private Catholic schools.
Wow.
And a homeschool organization that's based out of Post Falls as well. So it's very interesting to see both sides of the educational divide, I guess you could say,
sure,
between both public, private, and homeschooling. So,
okay, so let's dive into it. Why are you running for school board?
Well, there's nothing more important than education. It's absolutely foundational. It shapes not only individuals, like, you know, the whole future of a child who goes, you know, through high school or college. It'll shape their life on an individual basis. It'll shape the families that are then created, and moving on from that, the family being the building block of the nation, it can affect entire nations. And I would actually argue that a failure to properly educate is one of the primary reasons why we're going through the upheaval in this country that we are going through. I don't think people are being taught to think critically anymore. I don't think that people are being able to assimilate their own kind of information. It's basically, as far as I can tell, the public education system has become like a factory assembly line for economic slaves, is basically how I see it. And that's wrong. We should be teaching our kids different things, obviously different skills. They should not be taught to hate themselves based on their race. They should not be taught, questionable things about sexuality, right? They should be taught how to read, how to write. They should be taught their history so they don't repeat it, and taught how to live their life to be successful, right? I mean, education doesn't make you smarter. It takes the gifts and the talents that you have, and it directs them towards that which is good.
And supposed to motivate you to want to be smarter.
Right, of course. Well, I mean, it should inspire you to get more information on things. I mean, education, I remember when I graduated high school, it was like, ah, fantastic, I've graduated high school. I never have to learn another thing again in my life. It was over.
And then life.
Right, I never had to do, and then all of a sudden it was like, you know, my second year of college, and I'm like, oh God, something's wrong here. And it's like I start picking up books and reading again and teaching myself things that I wasn't learning in the class. And it was like, wow, I've been missing out. You know, education really isn't just about, you know, K through 12 or even college. It's about what happens after that, you know? And if you don't like to be educated, then that's not good. You should want to be abreast of what's happening in the world and aware of where you are in history. I think that's going to play an integral part in determining where we as individuals, as families, and a nation go.
So I want to set the stage for the rest of the conversation. I did some research on the Post Falls School District, mm-hmm. and I learned that it has 11 schools with 5,887 students and 303 teachers.
Are those current numbers?
Well,
I thought I saw something that said there was about 6,000 students, but I could be wrong.
These numbers might be a little behind. These are coming from publicschoolreview.com.
Okay.
So it's an online source using public data, but you know, it could be last year's data.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I remember the where I got my statistics was, I think, idahoschools.org, and they said that they were having some issues getting accurate data because of the coronavirus thing. So.
Okay, so the school district has a revenue of about $43 million and a spending budget of about $41 million. Public School Review reports math proficiency is 48%, while reading proficiency is 56%. Mm. So what would you say is the biggest challenge facing the school district, and what are your plans to overcome those challenges?
Well, I think that on the whole, like I said, the educational establishment in this country has gone terribly down the wrong course. One of the big things that I was kind of preparing for today, I didn't want to be completely in the dark on it, is something called social and emotional learning, which is one of these areas where we're getting away from the classics, we're getting away from reading, writing, and arithmetic, and we're getting into, how do you feel? How does that make you feel? Well, how does this math problem make you feel? And obviously, that's not good. I think one of the biggest reasons why you would be seeing deficiencies like this in student achievement would be because of Common Core. We have you know, a long, long track record. For example, the Catholic Church has a 2,000-year track record of successfully being able to educate children. And now all of a sudden, with all of the AI and data learning that we can possibly throw at it, and our kids are underachieving at this point. And I think that's because we've become unhinged from reality. And Common Core is just one of those things where it's not about objectively 2 and 2 is 4. It's about, well, what, how does it make you feel?
Right.
Right.
Like, well, you know, and I think it's interesting. You're the first person I've heard put it into perspective of 2,000 years of learning. We actually have about 16,000 years of human learning. And now they're wanting to improve it. In just the last 20 years, we've apparently made such a leap forward that they've got to completely restructure the way children learn in order for this society to advance.
Right.
I'm not buying it.
Me neither. And it's just incredible to me. I mean, maybe I'm going to get in trouble for this. I don't know. I am not an evolutionist. I do not believe we came from monkeys. I am a devolutionist, right? You're telling me that Dante, who wrote the Inferno and all of these very classic texts, who in middle school would have been able to read and write in Greek, Latin, and Italian, and now our students are graduating high school without the minimum reading proficiency.
Yeah, they can't even speak English.
They can't even speak proper English. You're telling me that we are evolving.
Right.
Right. That doesn't add up in my
book.
Not
a chance.
Not my math. Not the math that I was taught when I was in school.
Well, and even today, if we go to Europe, students that are graduating high school know on average 2.5 languages. Mm-hmm. When I was stationed in Europe in the 80s, the communicating with the Germans was easy. Mm. They all spoke English.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn German, but they wanted to speak English. So, and not only did they know German, English, French, many of them knew Spanish.
Yeah.
Try to find an American student in high school today that speaks more than one language.
Right. I mean, try to find an American student that understands his own language, like that deeply understands some of the word origins. I mean, kids aren't being taught Latin anymore, and most of the English language has Latin roots. And if you don't understand the Latin that came in, then you're not going to understand the English. You're not going to understand things like quarantine. Like, where did that word come from? What does it mean? You know? Brief aside, Germans have the best English of any Europeans. They speak it, I mean, almost to the point where I can't tell the difference. I've been to Europe a lot. I spent 4 months over there a couple of years ago, and wonderful place. Love it.
All right, that's a whole nother topic. I won't go there. So, okay, you're running for a board seat. Now, let me go over the hierarchy here just to make sure that I'm on the right sheet of music here. So Board of Trustees, the superintendent is your only employee. They work for you. You can hire and fire and direct the superintendent.
That is correct.
Superintendent then oversees the principals. The principals oversees the teachers. Teachers teach the student.
Yeah.
How am I doing?
That's about right.
Okay. So as a member of the Board of Trustees for the Post Falls School District, what are you going to be able to do with the education that's happening at the student level?
Well, alone, nothing, right? If I'm the only one of the three candidates that we have elected, I think the other two are Guy Mikininch and Logan Creighton are the other two that are running for Post Falls, which would give us a 3/5 majority if all three of us ran and won. So alone, if I am the only one elected, then I can just be a stumbling block, right? I can just be that one lone voice of dissent that, you know, can bring in concerned parents and give them a fair hearing. I know that that's a really big thing when you look at these different school board meetings that are getting very heated. They're almost turning into riots. I forget, is it Loudoun County, I believe? There was a massive upheaval at one of their school board meetings over the critical race theory. And they actually arrested one of the parents and threw him out. And I mean, this is terrible. Just the other day, there was protests over at Coeur d'Alene schools. And so the reason that this is happening is because parents are not having their voices heard, or at least they don't feel like their voices are being heard. And so if I'm the only one on the school board that has the public's interest at heart, then I can at least bring them to the meetings. I can make sure that they can air their concerns for their students, for their children, and I can vote no on things. But ultimately, the whole thing of a board of trustees is collective action. The point is to get everybody on the board to be voting in the same direction and to have coherent priorities among all the board members. So
we're going to take a little break to hear from a sponsor.
Coeur d'Alene needs a conservative mayor who listens to the voice of its residents. Joe Alfieri is our only solid choice for mayor in this coming November 2nd vote. A leader and a listener, Alfieri is strong on conservative values. With community burdensome growth already underway, we need sound planning and strong insight, limiting local government control over our future. Planning is everything. No easy endorsements, no rubber stamping of decisions. Joe Alfieri has the sound, moral, and strong talent of a solid decision maker. Vote Joe Alfieri for mayor, November 2nd, 2021. Paid for by Vote Joe for CDA campaign, Caroline Alfieri, treasurer.
So let's talk about what you would like to accomplish. From a standpoint of what Post Falls School District is currently doing, what's two things that you want to change right away your first term in office?
My first term in office, well, the first thing that I would do is request a forensic audit of the curriculum. I want to personally go over the history books. I want to go over the civics books. I want to go over all of that angle, the historical, at least, angle of what the kids are being taught. That's my wheelhouse. That's my strong suit. And so I'm going to know if these kids are being taught something that's a little out of whack. And so I want to go through that systematically, really see what our kids are being taught, because you go online to the Post Falls School District, you can't see what the curriculum is. I mean, I would want to, if I was sending my kid there, she's only 8 months, so she's not old enough, but I would want to own a copy of whatever curriculum they were teaching at that school. I want to know what's being taught to my kid. And right now we don't have that much transparency at Post Falls schools. And so I would like to help bring that transparency, at least on the curriculum level. So that's kind of aspect one, a forensic audit of the curriculum. Aspect two is going to be basically deep diving on the SEL thing. So that's, for those unaware, as I was just a couple of months ago, it's called social emotional learning. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
Yes.
Well, yes, I have, but this is in regards to Post Falls.
Right. So this is... one of those moments where I kind of have Cassandra syndrome, I think. You know, in 2017, I was talking about critical race theory on my radio show at the time, and that was a little too early for that conversation. People weren't ready for that. That's okay. We're having that conversation now, but the next conversation that we're going to be having is going to be about social-emotional learning, mark my words. It comes from a very bad string of thinkers. The main guy that is purported to have started social emotional learning is this guy, Daniel Goleman, who is now a frequent lecturer at the World Economic Forum. He wrote a book in 1996 called Emotional Intelligence, Why It Matters More Than IQ. And that's where this SEL stuff comes from. His teacher was a guy named David McClelland at Harvard University. And McClelland based all of his theories and studies on the work of Henry A. Murray. Henry A. Murray was the guy that was accused of running these extremely inappropriate, if not borderline torturous, tests on students at Harvard University in the 1960s. So there's the kind of academic milieu where this comes out of. And Henry Murray, who started a lot of this kind of stuff, this emotional testing, personality testing, Henry Murray created what we know today as the assessment centers, where if you wanted to be like a manager at Kmart, they would send you to get a battery of personality tests. Henry Murray's the guy that created that. He was contracted by a group called the Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation, who worked with Theodore Adorno and Max Horkheimer to do this book, which is a massive tome called The Authoritarian Personality, right? This is what all of the modern CRT stuff is based off of, all of the critical race theory, social deconstruction, Freudianism, everything about tearing down Western culture, Christianity, Western society. So it's out of this milieu that social emotional learning comes from. And when people hear about it, it's like, oh, well, we're just teaching the kids how to be, have good manners, raise your hand in class. How would it make you feel if you were interrupted, right? That's the kind of angle that social emotional learning
manifests. Let me ask the question, because we're leading right into it. What is the thesis behind social and emotional learning? What's the goal?
If we go back to, I guess, the people that began this educational movement, right, of both critical theory and all that flows from that, the point that they were coming from was that there was something deeply wrong with Western society. The reason why they thought that something was wrong with Western society is because Karl Marx had predicted that in the industrialized West, there would be communist revolutions. And that didn't happen, right? They expected it to happen around the time of the First World War, but it did happen in Russia. So groups like the Frankfurt School were put together basically to study why Western society did not accept a communist revolution, and to diagnose whatever sickness might be preventing them from fulfilling that goal of communism. So that's their basis for creating critical theory as a way to deconstruct Western culture and society, because it was not the economic arguments, it was the societal arguments. It was the churches, it was the families, the towns, the communities. That was why communism did not take over Western Europe. So if we come to today, with all of the CRT, SEL stuff, basically the idea is that Westerners are sick. There's something wrong with them. They're racist. They are bigots. They are Christians, which is problematic, of course. And ultimately, as far as I can tell, the goal is to indoctrinate a slave class that will basically just be units of economic input and output. That's it. No soul, no family, no joy in life. It's about how are you contributing to the economy, and you know, are you producing and consuming the way that we want you to?
So let me make sure that I synthesize this correctly. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what it sounds like you're saying is SEL, and for that matter CRT, are tools to break the current system, not to fix the current system.
Basically. That's how I see it anyway. I mean, the current system was broken. Like, it's already done. Like, they won. That happened decades and decades ago, right? I mean, CRT is not like it wasn't like a grassroots thing that happened and then it was adopted into academia. It started in academia with Max Horkheimer, Theodore Adorno, Herbert Marcuse, Eric Fromm. These are the people that started this, intellectual movement or educational movement, whatever you want to call it. And it started in the colleges. So, for example, with CRT, a woman named Angela Davis, right? She was a Black Panther. She was arrested for trafficking guns. She was a student of Marcuse's at, I believe it was UCSD, University of California, San Diego. She was a student there. So critical race theory really begins with her, not with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, which is what the media will probably tell you. So frankly, when they got their tenure at these colleges, that was game over, right? Because they're educating the next set of educators. So this all happened behind closed doors. We didn't see the collapse of education, but it happened. And so now we are living in this post-collapse kind of era. And what they're doing now is it's moved from the colleges down to the high schools, and now it's going even lower and lower, right, into middle school and kindergarten.
Okay. I mean, you've done a fantastic job of defining the problem.
Mm.
Now, you're running for an office to fix it.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Well, SEL has already been implemented in Post Falls. And from what I can tell, everybody assures me that it's totally benign. It's just teaching kids nice manners. However, they've got a foothold, and SEL is not good for our kids. It's not good for parents. It's incredibly problematic on a myriad of levels. So the first thing is going to be trying to get a consensus on the board to get rid of it. I mean, if you want your kids to be empathetic and polite in class, then you should just teach them to be empathetic and polite in class. We don't need to have an entire curriculum that's based on data accumulation to be able to help make our kids moral or nice to each other.
But I mean, we should be getting that at church.
We should be getting that at church. You should be getting that from your parents. I mean, Right. Absolutely. Now, there is an issue with not all parents really care about their kids. That's true. I mean, we live in an area where, you know, there's drugs for sure. Actually, I believe between 31 and 40% of the students at post-fall schools are from poverty-level homes. And 87.7% of those kids are white. So, like, what? We're going to be teaching these kids that they're privileged? No. And where are their parents? Well, you know what I'm saying?
So I come from the education system where it was just before they took over the education system.
Right.
I was maybe one of the last students or the last generation that came from a good education system. I got a good education.
Yeah.
Public school the whole time. I got kicked out of Catholic school because I was a little bit hyperactive. Go figure. However, second through 12th grade, I was in public school. And I make a darn good living because I had a great education. Mm. I know my grandkids, however, don't have a good education. Mm-hmm. In fact, my youngest grandson, Math Phenon, threw it all away because he's too addicted to video games. Mm-hmm. But that's a whole nother podcast. What's at issue right now is we have an entire nation where the education system is broken. Mm-hmm. This program focuses on Idaho. Mm-hmm. And talking with you today, we're focusing right now on Post Falls.
Right. So what I'm saying is, again, as one person being elected to a board, there isn't much that I can do.
No, I know that.
If we had a supermajority on the board, we would have to get rid of SEL. Common Core has got to go. And we need to be implementing like more traditional curricula that has worked. It has a track record of working as opposed to this new Common Core, SEL, CRT curricula that is leaving half of the graduating students unable to read and write English properly.
Right. Well, and I'm setting up the tone for the listener. So I know some of you out there, many of you probably, are saying to yourself, it's just too big of a problem. Ed, you framed it correctly. This is nationwide. Every single school district is struggling with this. This is something that it's just too big to challenge. I got 2 points for you. I'm at a historical point, and I have a current point. From a historical standpoint, I was going through an education system 40 years ago that was good. It didn't have any CRT foothold. They came into a system that was working, and they broke it. Mm-hmm. So if they can do it, so can we.
That's right.
Number two, just now, we're recording this episode on September 27th. This episode probably won't be published until maybe like the second week of October. But just a couple of weeks ago, listening to my voice right now, we had a pretty big transformation take place at a local school, at NIC. Mm. We had a board of trustees that went conservative. It was liberal. It went conservative. And the 3/5 majority of that board fired the president. Mm-hmm. Now, they noted without cause for legal reasons, but because the president wasn't doing what the board asked them to do.
Right.
So my message to the listeners is it really only takes one person to start the ball rolling. It is entirely possible to fix this system. You just got to have the cojones and willingness to do so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's within... At least I can conceive of it, right? A world where the people that are forced, or not forced, but the people that have to homeschool are going to be the ones that want to teach kids novel ideas. You know, if you want to do SEL with your kids, do it at home. Don't use state funds for it. Don't do it in our public schools. Instead, when you look at the numbers that are projected for post-fall schools, they are continually over-projecting the number of students that should be enrolled, right? The reason why is because they moved to Kootenai County, and the first thing that they do is they homeschool their kids. So there's a massive contingent of homeschoolers, a massive contingent of private schoolers. I don't think that they should be forced to do that. I think that they should be able to send their kids to public education, but I wouldn't send them to that school the way that it is now.
Right.
There's no way.
Right.
And so one of the main reasons why I'm running is because I have my daughter. I mean, maybe in 6 years, 8 years, maybe we can actually get the school system to a point where I would be proud to send my daughter there, as opposed to upset or feeling anxious about it, right? What is she going to learn? What are they going to teach her? So we do have a shot. And if there's any place in America where we have a really good shot, it's here in Kootenai County. The demographics are there. The faith in God is there. You know, it's really exciting. The people are wonderful here, and they deserve a school system that puts their interests first, that puts their interests as parents first instead of the interests of teachers' unions, right? Or educational book publishers, or what I've been calling the education industrial complex, right? So we have that opportunity here. And, you know, it's as far as I'm concerned, it's black and white. You might not like me. You might think I'm kind of maybe I've read a little bit too much history, right? I've gone down enough rabbit holes. But the truth of the matter is that there are three of us running that have been approved or endorsed by the Kootenai County Republican Party. And there are three people that are running that have been endorsed by the, quote, Citizens for Post Falls Schools or whatever it is. That board of that nonprofit that gave their recommendation for our opponents is ran by two Democrats and a union official, right? And so they're running independent people, they're running whatever, and they're giving you a lot of the same talking points as well. But when you look at the fine print, they're talking about putting the children first. They're talking about putting the educators first. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I get that, but they're using it as a bludgeon against parents who are the ones that ultimately should have the say in their child's education.
Well, and this is kind of what I argued at the last levy election. So Post Falls has a 48% proficiency in mathematics, and you're asking for another $40 million. Wait a minute, I don't think you've earned it. Why don't you tell me what you're going to do to fix the fact that half of the students don't know how to do math at right. the level that they need to, and then we can talk about maybe giving you some more money.
Right.
But no, the argument's always, well, Idaho's dead last in the per pupil spending. Well, Washington, D.C. is first, and their education system is crap.
Yeah, all of it is. Yeah.
So it's not about how much you spend per student.
No.
It's what about what do you accomplish with the dollars that you have?
Absolutely, and not only that, but just the whole, I mean, you can look at, I mean, I know people that homeschool and their kids can speak or at least read Greek, Latin, and are fluent in English. Right now, their mother taught them that. You're telling me that she couldn't teach a class in a public school
right.
on language?
Yeah.
Well, she can't because she doesn't have the credentials. Yeah. She doesn't have the credentials.
Yeah, she hasn't been blessed by the education
right.
system.
And ultimately, the education system, it's like self-selecting. It's just like standardized testing. If you've got a bazillion different degrees, that just means that you've been through 10 years of propaganda and programming, and you are going to faithfully carry out what the educational industrial complex wants you to do, which has nothing to do with education, has everything to do with indoctrination and the creation of, as Yuval Noah Harari calls it, a global useless class.
Right. So how do people learn more about your campaign or better yet support you?
You can go to davidjreilly.com. That's David, JReilly.com.
And I'll include that in the show notes. Any final thoughts you want to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is to take heart and to be strong, because we can beat this thing, but only if we act together, only if we have a kind of solidarity with one another, only if we will not allow the press and the media and the establishment educational system and the unions to tear us apart and set us one against another, right? A house divided cannot stand. And ultimately, we have God on our side. We have Jesus Christ on our side. We will be victorious. The question is, how much worse do things need to get before people take this seriously?
David, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me on, Ed.
We've reached the end of the episode, but not the end of the issue. Please share this episode with your friends and family. If you have questions or would like to share your own issues and ideas, visit www.idahospeaks.com and click Share an Issue. Your state, your voice, Idaho Speaks.